Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and here to talk with you about our next guest, Susan Krieger, who has authored a book. It's called Come, Let Me Guide You. And there's a special connection, I think, between people and their pets, but I think it's even can be even more intimate, the relationship between guide dogs and their owners. And we're going to learn about that special connection firsthand as we talk with Susan Krieger about her book. Again, it's called Come, Let Me Guide You, A Life Shared with a Guide Dog. Susan Krieger is a sociologist and writer. She teaches in the program in Feminist Gender and Sexuality Studies at Stanford University, teaches there, and has authored 7 books. So it's a real treat for me to have her with us today, and it will be for you as well. Susan, thank you so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
It's a real pleasure to have you with us. And before we talk about your story, maybe you can talk a little bit about how you lost or losing your eyesight to a condition that's called birdshot retinochoroidopathy, I believe.
Yes, it is.
And it's sort of something that happens over a fairly long period of time, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, my eye condition that causes my blindness is called birdshot retinochoroidopathy. It's an autoimmune disease that I've had for nearly 20 years now. It started as an inflammation on my choroid, spread to my retina, and resulted in further inflammation and scarring. The result is that I have blind areas in both my central and peripheral vision, and the remaining residual vision that I have is very dark and blurry, lacks detail, lacks depth perception. So I may see somewhat, but I may miss an object or a person standing directly in front of me, which poses challenges to my mobility. Therefore, a guide dog has been very much of a gift to me.
I'm sure it has. I remember at one point in the book you mentioned you could, at least, look up and see the sky, but looking down, you had trouble seeing the ground.
Yes, I can see big, bright objects. The sky can be very bright with clouds in it, but something close to me, something somewhat darker at the ground, is a challenge, and I won't see it. So a guide dog takes command and is able to guide me around obstacles, in and out of buildings, up and down stairs, and take me many places with safety.
And you, I think, I don't know that inspired is the right word, but you were really thought about a guidebook when you were teaching, and one of your students had a guide dog and brought it to class.
Yes, that's correct. In the book, Come Let Me Guide You, A Life Shared with a Guide Dog, I discuss my personal experiences and my experiences academically teaching. And I was, I believe, in my first year of teaching a course on women and disabilities at Stanford when a student came in and a guide dog was under the table. At that time, I said, oh, can I pet your dog? And the student said, oh, no, you can't. And I thought she was being rather harsh. I had much to learn, that you don't normally pet a guide dog, so as you don't want to distract it from its work. But I was very impressed with this golden retriever that the student had. And the next year, I actually applied to guide dog school and asked for a golden retriever just like hers. So I continued to teach that course for the next 14 years, I think, with a guide dog under the table. And I owed it, in a way, to that personal experience with the student.
It's a great story. Susan Krieger, our guest today, author of Come, Let Me Guide You, A Life Shared with a Guide Dog. And just interested in what you have to say as you listen to us talk. Have you ever interacted with a service dog as you listen to the show? Do you have questions about the guide dog owner relationship? Susan just talked about one in terms of not petting the dog. Do you have any disabilities? Maybe you have a disability that people have assumptions about that may be not really right. I hope you'll join in with your experiences or questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and with your comments. And you really have kind of 4 parts to your book, if I'm trying to remember. Yeah, 4 parts, isn't it?
Yes.
So your first part really deals with your relationship with your dog over the whole, 10 years or so.
Yes. Come Let Me Guide You is an unusual book in that it covers the entire 10-year span of my working life with my first guide dog, Tila. Usually a book might cover just the beginning of getting a guide dog, but I began this book when Tila was 11 years old and facing retirement, and I started to discuss her life as an older guide dog, you know, the things she was reluctant to do and reluctant to go by noisy construction sites or reluctant to get on noisy buses that might discomfort her. I began writing about her as an older guide dog and then continued on to describe her early years, where she was born, how she was raised, how I met her. So I covered this whole period, this whole 10-year working period. And I also go on in the book to discuss other significant relationships in my life that were enriched and supported by our bond over all these years, because she was constantly with me. You know, with a guide dog, every step you take, every breath you take, the dog is there. It's an ever-present source of support. It was a source of support for my sense of myself and for all my relationships over this time. So I go on to discuss those other important relationships. I discuss my increasing loss of eyesight and how even though I had a guide dog over this time, we would still get lost together. I still had to worry about my next step because there are constant new challenges. I think I then discuss my teaching. I have a chapter on the classroom where having the guide dog under the table increased, I think, the comfort of the students and my own comfort as a teacher, and I hope provided an example for the students of requesting and having assistance, because it was clear that I came to class every day with a dog, that I needed some help in navigating my life. And then I have a concluding chapter in the book, which brings it to a nice end, which is that when Tila was another year or so old, I got a second guide dog, so she was able to retire. And his name is Fresco. And I discuss the challenges of having a second guide dog when I had for so long shared my intimacy with one dog and shared her personality. And then I got a new dog, a different kind of dog, a more serious dog, less playful, excellent guide dog. And I discussed how the two dogs soon got along and how I managed to adjust to a second intimate partner.
Well, it's really a wonderful and interesting book. As someone, I'm a professor here I happen to be a professor at UW-Madison, so I was also quite intrigued and quite enjoyed your chapter on your teaching of your class. I thought it was really interesting to me, which obviously was a very successful class, and it was fun to read comments and how your students kind of grew through the content of content of the course. Very interesting.
Oh, I'm so glad you like that. Yes, I in that teaching chapter, I try to have the students' voices speak about their experience of this course on women and disabilities, as well as the teacher speaking, so that someone could actually feel like they took the course along with us. I'm so glad you like that.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Jean in Lake Geneva has a comment, so let's go there. Jean, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to share a short experience with our guide dog, Cody,
mm-hmm.
a black lab mix. We had Cody 3 years before we needed a guide dog. He was a rescue dog, and my brother got in a car accident, leaving him a quadriplegic. He was in Frederick Hospital for a year and finally allowed to come home. Cody had not seen Peter for an entire year. However, the first night that Peter was home, Cody went to his bedside when he woke up and took the catheter bag that he needed to use in the middle of the night and brought it and put it in the toilet in the bathroom on his own. This went on every night. My mother, who was almost 80 years old, was supposed to be caring for my brother at night. He was in her home. However, Cody took that catheter bag twice a night, every night, for the next 8 years and allowed my mother to be able to care for my brother in her home. Eventually, my brother was able to go to the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater because Cody basically took my brother's training, anticipated his needs, and became a wheelchair dog. And that is an exceptional story. I just want to comment that many dogs have the empathy and potential to aid humans regardless of their disability, and we certainly all love and respect dogs greatly for that service.
Oh, what a great story. Susan, a comment?
Yes, that's a wonderful story. It is amazing how the dog can be so intimately tied to the person that they can anticipate your needs. Thank you so much for that story.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much, Jean. I really appreciate that. And there are so many examples in your book of extraordinary intelligence that Tila, for example, showed to you in your lives together.
Yes. Tila is from Guide Dogs from the Blind in San Rafael, California. There are several schools in the country, and the dog is specially bred and then socialized by, in this case, a family for about 15 months, and then goes back to the guide dog school for training, and then I attended the school and was trained with her. So the dogs are specially bred for their intelligence and their ability to be dutiful and responsive. It's a long period of training. I think my first guide dog, Tila, was half golden retriever and half yellow lab. And I always looked at her golden retriever part as her party girl self, the part of the dog that wants to just go and have a good time all the time, likes to play. And her golden, she's a yellow lab, so her kind of golden, her Labrador retriever self is her more serious self, the more dutiful dog that takes commands well and that makes a very good guide dog.
That is a wonderful story. And I want to continue on with you. We're going to take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with our guest, Christine and Wasika. I really hope you'll stay on board here to talk about your experiences. And you stay with us, too. News is next. Learning how to adapt to daily life with a disability is hard for many people to imagine unless they've experienced it themselves. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today we're hearing from someone who has adapted to losing her vision and how she's taken a new look on life with the help of her service dog, Tila, and her second dog, actually, Fresco. Susan Krieger, our guest, sociologist, writer, teaches in the program in feminist gender and sexuality studies at Stanford University, and the author of 7 books, including the one we're talking about, the title of which is Come, Let Me Guide You, A Life Shared with a Guide Dog. Really interesting, very interesting read for me, and I enjoyed it. And I think you will as well. You may have questions for her. Maybe you've had an experience with a guide dog yourself or with family members. Join in. The number 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. I want to go to Christine and Wasika, who's been waiting a while. Christine, thank you so much for waiting. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and all my joints are going bone on bone, so it's a very severe form of osteoarthritis. And the service dog that I have started out as just a pet, and she started helping me around the house. She saw that I struggled to get up from a chair. She would come over. I would grab onto her harness. She would pull me. And I found a dog trainer that was able to work with me to help me train her to be a service dog, and she's been just a blessing to me. She's semi-retired now. She doesn't pull my wheelchair anymore, but she still helps me around the house, and when we go out on short visits, she goes out with me. And she's not your typical service dog. She's an Alaska Malamute mix, but she loves pulling. And
yeah.
She pulls me around during the day, and when she was pulling my wheelchair, she absolutely loved that and has been just a blessing, definitely a blessing to me.
Oh, thank you so much for calling. Susan, a comment?
Yes, that's a wonderful story, and I think it calls attention to the fact that there are many kinds of service dogs, and they have each their own type of specialized training. I think it puts me in mind, too, of the fact that, in my case at least, I think for many others, a service dog, a guide dog, provides much more than the actual task that they're, you know, obtained for. You know, people don't necessarily know a guide dog does the tasks of guiding me safely through the world, up and down stairs, stops at curbs, takes me around obstacles, will avoid my stepping into traffic, and do all types of safeguards so that we can travel safely. But in addition, one of the things I discussed in this book that I found is that there are many other functions that the dog does in addition to the technical service, in this case, the service of guiding the blind person. In my case, what I have found is that walking with a guide dog has made me more self-confident as a person, made me feel less alone in the world, having the companion, but also made interaction with other people something more present in my daily life. You know, because people will stop me and say, oh, what a beautiful dog, or what's her name, or even can I pet her? And it enables me to interact with the public, perhaps tell them about guide dogs or about my blindness, but it produces more of a positive sense of relationship with others, as well as having this other person by my side. You know, it's a dog, but as I mentioned before, Tila has had this personality of being playful and yet dutiful, and I feel like I'm walking with another person in the shape of a dog, sharing her pleasures as well as, you know, thinking of my own pleasures and my own desires. And she'll, because she's been so playful, and I know this over the 10 years, when I walk, usually she's guiding me down the street, and normally I will be thinking and worrying, what do I do next, or some problem in life, and she'll be so much acting like, well, let's have a good time. You know, we should have a good time when we're out. Come play with me, and it will lighten my mood and has really made me feel much more positive about myself in the world. And because I'm a sociologist and I study personal identity, I had to remark in the book about how the personal identity of the individual with the service dog, or in my case with the guide dog, can be very positively affected by having the dog in ways that extend well beyond the technical service that the dog performs.
Yeah, it was really interesting and very enlightening for me. I hadn't considered that or thought about that whole positive aspect of relationship with other people and how that may positively affect a person who is in that position. It's a wonderful additional benefit, I guess you could say, to having a guide dog.
Yes. Yes, it is. And, you know, people can be a bit awkward dealing with a disabled person or a blind person. How do they act? And the dog really gives you a way to act and interact with the person that is very comfortable and easy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there was a question on Facebook from David who wondered if your dog is from the Leader Dog for the Blind program, Canine Companions, or where was your dog trained?
Yes, the Leader Dog is a good school as well. My dogs, both of them, Tila and then Fresco, are from Guide Dogs for the Blind in San Rafael, California. But these schools have very similar training and accreditation. They're very strictly overseen because these dogs are dogs on whose life, you know, the blind person depends. So we are from Guide Dogs for the Blind in San Rafael.
And in that process, of course, there's a huge amount of training, and they spend time with a family, really another family, before they come to the person, the blind person.
Yes, yes, and this is so in, for the most part, all the schools. The dogs specially bred, and I believe at Guide Dogs for the Blind, at about 8 weeks of age, a family or an individual, or sometimes it's a group, a church group, for example, will take that dog, and they're called at the organization puppy raisers. They raise that 8-week-old puppy until he or she is around 15 months. And that's a long time, and they're given strict rules for how to socialize the dog. And they take the dog everywhere so that they can be exposed to all aspects of life and take copious notes about the personality of the dog and what it does on its tasks. And they really do a huge amount of that initial socialization and training. Then the dog is returned to the Guide Dogs campus at Guide Dogs for the Blind. And I think similarly at other schools, for several months of training specifically in guide work. They're taught how to pull a harness, and they're taught commands, left, right, forward, And I give the dog commands both verbally and with my body motions, how I move my body. So the dog is taught how to do all these specific mobility efforts for a guide person, to be a guide dog for a blind person that they will later meet. And that's quite a process. And then the individual comes and is trained in what the dog already knows for several weeks.
Yeah, so you have your own training program.
Yeah, the individual has to be trained. The dog is already trained. And then what Guide Dogs for the Blind does in San Jose, and they also have an Oregon campus, and I think the other schools do too, is they come out every year and they check on the status and the progress of the dog and that the individual is doing well and the dog is doing well and they're available to consult, because sometimes the dog will need additional training once they're on site with the individual. So it's a very meticulous process of training and of keeping the training.
And, you know, I think I read somewhere, and maybe it was in your, probably was in your book, that there aren't really that many people with a service dog. You're kind of part of a minority, are you not? It was just in the number in North America was, I thought, kind of small, really.
Right. And I'm talking specifically about guide dogs for the blind. So I think there was something like 7,000 to 10,000. There are not that many, and it may have been closer to 7,000 active guide dogs for the blind. If you looked at the population of service dogs in general, it would be larger, but the guide dogs for the blind, it is a small minority. And, you know, I feel, and I discuss in the book, that I feel very privileged to have been included in that minority, and I'm aware all the time that it is. You know, you can't just take a dog everywhere. You can't have a dog with you all the time. Only some people can when it's vital to their well-being and they've been certified and gone through the training. And it is truly a privilege.
Christy in Marshdale, thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead, Christy.
I'm hearing impaired, and I can't hear the doorbell. I can't hear the telephone ring all the time, and especially one night when I take, I'm totally deaf at night because I take everything, my cochlear implant and my hearing aid out, and the fire alarm went off one night, and the dog that I have woke me up, and one night somebody tried to break in my house and the dog scared him away. And they're just teeny little dogs. They're only about 12 pounds, but that bark just set it off. So I find my dogs life-saving in my life.
Oh. Well, another wonderful story, Susan.
Yes, it truly is. I think it speaks also to the issue that having a guide dog or a service dog can make an individual feel more safe for being less alone. You're not alone with your disability. And I know walking with blindness, as I've done when I walk with a cane, you feel very alone in the world. And having the comfort of the service dog, it makes you feel much more safe because of no longer being alone and facing whatever adversity there is.
An interesting email we have here from someone who says, my husband works at Oshkosh Correctional Institution on a unit where inmates are specifically selected and approved to work and train guide and service dogs. The names of the two groups that work with the prison and inmates are Occupaws Guide Dog Association and Pathways of Courage. My husband has shared some amazing things these dogs are able to do once they've been trained by the inmates.
Yes, that's very good information to have. I think there are many such small organizations and in prisons and the rest that do this very selfless work of training and raising these dogs for others. And it is very heartening to hear these stories. I would add that, you know, in Come Let Me Guide You, A Life Shared with a Guide Dog, I try to be very intimate in talking about my relationship with a dog, you know, because often people see these dogs, guide dogs and service dogs, out with others, but they don't have that inside view of what's going on between the person and the dog. One of the aspects that I have found most interesting is that I have to talk to my dog all the time, not only giving the commands, but having conversations with the dog. And I try to give examples of these intimate conversations so that leaders might come to experience what it's like from the inside out to walk with a guide dog or a service dog.
You know,
just like you would talk to another person, you talk to the dog.
You know, I did want to bring it up when you mentioned intimacy. I thought this was about as intimate a book as I've read. I really felt like we were getting your most innermost thoughts and comments on the page frankly, much more than a quote-unquote normal book. You're very open opening yourself to your readers.
Oh, thank you for that comment. Yes, you know, it's always embarrassing that someone actually has read all these intimate thoughts that I've put down on paper and the computer and then published. But yes, as a person and as a sociologist in particular, I have aimed for a very intimate style, that if I probe my own experiences fairly specifically and deeply for the reader, I will be getting at some truths that may be relevant to others who also have these inner experiences, but they're often not discussed. So I do aim for a style that I call the art of the intimate narrative, trying to present that inner life. And I feel often other people may have similar inner experiences, and I'm hoping that some of my articulations will help others to feel more comfortable with their own inner challenges, let us say.
Well, it's certainly made for interesting and often inspiring reading. Rosie and Ashland, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. I was wondering, I have been blind for 5 years and have thought about a dog, but I come up with, how do you deal with the poop and the hair and making somebody else have to deal with that?
That is...
Okay, yes. I'd be glad to address that. You know, that is one of the questions that immediately comes to mind. From the beginning in guide dog training, they show us how to clean up after your dog. One of the things about the dogs that I received is they're trained to relieve well on the leash, and they teach you particular ways for having the dog circle and move around you on the leash so you know where the dog's head is and you know where the tail is and you know where to bend down to clean up after them. So this is taught. And the hair, you know, the vacuum cleaner, it is possible to vacuum up invisible hair and to have somehow other guidance when hair gets away that I don't see. But definitely these are things that are very doable, but it can take some teaching for how to do it. So I wouldn't let the challenge of cleaning up after the dog stop anyone from getting a guide dog if that is desired.
And you would, and Rosie would likely be getting pretty good training, hopefully, within the program.
Yes, all the certified schools for guide dogs for the blind of one sort or another do very detailed training so that the individual you would be left with very much confidence about your ability to take care of the dog.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Rosie, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. You know, I just want to go back to the families for a minute. Maybe I'm jumping ahead here, but I really wanted to do it because I was in tears here when I was reading the piece. This is in the last chapter, I believe, where you were, I think it was at graduation.
Yes.
And the teenage daughter of the family that had the dog, your dog, Fresco, wrote a piece, wasn't able to be at the ceremony, but wrote a piece that was really moving to me.
Yes, the book ends with the chapter, A New Pair of Eyes, where I get my second guide dog, Fresco, and have to get used to his personality. And the last chapter in the end of the book has a description of a scene at Guide Dogs for the Blind, when we had a graduation for each dog, when the person finishes the training with the dog, there's a graduation ceremony for that group of students. The puppy raisers, the people who raise the dog, attend, and the person, the blind person who's receiving the dog, along with the dog, and in a very moving ceremony that I describe in the book, the puppy raisers stand with the dog and take the leash and the harness and hand the dog to the blind person and wish them well. And in this section, in this end of the chapter, I have an excerpt from a moving statement written by the teenage daughter of the family that raised Fresco as she turns the dog over to me. I think quoting from it is probably beyond my recollection exactly enough, but she talks about how she feels that what they put into this guide dog, because people do it as a volunteer contribution, that they put so much love into this dog. They care for this dog so much, as well as socializing it in, you know, not to poop in the house and to be good and lie under the table in restaurants. They put so much love into the dog that she was saying she almost saw this dog as a gift of love, and she was wishing him well in his future life as a guide dog.
Yeah.
So I end the book with a kind of thank you to those raisers who raised the dogs, and a story about how my older guide dog, Tila, kind of hands the leash over to the new guide dog, Fresco, and says to him, you know, be good, take care of her.
Oh,
and it's a moving ending.
A very, very, very moving ending. And it's just, you know, how did you know when it was time for Tila to retire and Fresco? That's something someone else asked me. How do you know?
How do you know? Yes. The thing about getting a dog at first, it's such a happy experience, but you know that at some point the dog will have to retire and you might have to give that dog to someone else for their after retirement period. Well, at about age 10 or even earlier, Tila, they began to show signs of being more afraid when outdoors. You know, we would walk down a street. We live in San Francisco, and there would be construction noise on the side. She would just stop and refuse to guide me forward, turn me around, take me back to the corner, make me cross the street, and proceed on the other side away from the noise. Or we would be walking by bus stops, and she would start running, just running and, you know, going into a gallop, and I would have to run after her. And she was telling me, I don't want to get on the bus. It's noisy. It has air brakes. It jostles me around on the floor. Or we'd get home, and she would go under the desk when there was construction noise outside, have more trouble getting in and out of the car, just generally be showing her age and be telling me about it. So we knew that retirement was approaching and that we needed to apply for the following guide dog. But the dog still wants to work. They want to do everything, and the person needs to sort of cut back and recognize the needs of the dog.
And it was the handoff at the end, when you talk about the relationship between Tila and Fresco, was it was really fascinating and pretty moving as well. Susan, it's I tell you, it's been a real pleasure to be able to speak with you today about your book, and I so much enjoyed reading it, and I hope it's doing well.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I mean, you have read it. I'm so pleased. You're a wonderful and appreciative reader. I'm really touched. Thank you. Yes, yes.
Well, I hope we have a chance to talk again. Susan Krieger, thank you so much again. And I want to let our listeners know the title of the book, Come Let Me Guide You, A Life Shared with a Guide Dog. A very intimate story with a lot of great practical information, but also a lot of moving information, moving pieces about Susan's life with her guide dog and guide dogs, and with her other family members too. That's certainly her partner and her mother and therapist really made for an interesting book, and especially her teaching as well. Come Let Me Guide You by Susan Krieger. Thank you all for listening. Please stay with us. Coming up tomorrow, we'll get an update on the wildlife of Wisconsin.